This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertz, our General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, it has taken so long for this orb to be delivered. I told you we should have used a ship that had warp capability.
Chris, it's not my fault. They told me they fixed it.
They fixed it. No, it's good to finally be back here on mic with you, Matthew, to talk about The Orb. I'm not going to give everyone a big detailed rundown of what happened to my eye here. If you'd like to hear that, please go over and listen to the Ready Room 211, which just dropped. Larry Nemechek and I are talking about Star Trek Discovery and a lot of other Star Trek news that happened while I was away. But just suffice it to say, I've been hospitalized 4 times. I've had 4 eye surgeries. There's a bit more to come, but I'm trying to get back to normal, and we're here to talk Deep Space Nine.
And hey, you've got new 7 of 9 bionic eyes, so we're good to go.
I wish I did, Matthew. I wish I did. No, my eyes filled with silicon oil, which sounds like something that might happen in a Star Trek episode, but actually it's real life.
It does actually sound like a problem in a Star Trek episode.
But they'd use some kind of like plasma fluid or something like that.
Biomimetic gel or something, you know.
Yeah, the doctors would tech the tech in the hospital, no doubt. All right, so to get rolling again, we're going to do a 2-part episode here covering past tense. We're going to talk about, you know, we don't do episode reviews per se, so we're going to break this down into 2 parts. We're going to primarily talk about part 1 in the first episode here. And in the next orb, we'll primarily talk about part 2, but we might get things mixed up a little bit because these stories always run together, especially after you've seen them so many times. So Matthew, let's jump into the discussion and talk about the original concept for this episode. I think most people listening to this episode of The Orb know past tense quite well. Before we talk about the original concept, tell me, what were your thoughts on past tense the first time you saw it?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. Oh, man, that's so many years ago now when I think about it.
Did you see it when it first aired, or you saw it later on?
I did see it when it first aired all the way back there in 1995. So, I mean, goodness, this is over 20 years old now. And, wow, that's been a long time, Chris.
It really has.
No, I remember, though, back then, I think my main thoughts on this episode were that it's really good and it's really interesting. Star Trek, through all the iterations that we've gotten, we don't really know a lot about the time period that leads up to Cochrane creating the warp drive for the first time. I mean, we kind of have an idea of some things. You know, we've heard rumors, we've heard hearsay. It's been referenced on screen, but we don't really have a concrete idea. I mean, I guess you could read Greg Cox's The Eugenics Wars books and things like that, but
yeah, if you get into the books, it's right. Been fleshed out a little bit more, sure.
Exactly, but you know, for what we have on screen, we don't really know a lot. So to go back to that way before time period. We're talking 21st century. Things are really starting to kind of fall apart. And I think this was a really great exploration of that. And kind of seeing that we have a long way to go to get to the Star Trek future that we'd all kind of like to be in. I mean, there's a lot of hurdles to overcome to get there for sure.
And I think that's how we felt in the 90s. I mean, the thing is that the problems that this episode addresses have been with us for a long time, and they'll probably continue to be with us for a long time. So back then, certainly, I remember when it first aired, and I felt that it was addressing some concerns that we were seeing around us, and it was doing what science fiction always does and imagining where those might lead in the future. We'll talk about that a little bit more coming up. But it seemed very far off because it was 1995 and they're talking about 2024. And when something's 30 years in the future, you think that, well, we'll figure this all out before we get to that point. And when this episode first aired, my feeling was that it was a really great Star Trek episode because it delivered social commentary in the way that the best episodes of Star Trek do. Watching it over and over as the years go by, I feel a little bit surprised at how we don't seem to make progress in the areas that are being discussed in the episode. And in some ways, it feels that we're going in the wrong direction. And it makes you wonder if we're actually going to get to Gene's future. There have been a number of things in recent years that have made this episode in particular feel very, very prophetic.
You know, I think that's sadly just one of the things when you watch this episode, as you said, honestly, we're probably worse off than we were when this episode aired back in 1995 in a lot of different areas. And there's a lot of factors to that. So as Chris and I are going to talk about this, we're probably going to mention some specific things that have happened. But obviously, we're not going to be able to touch all of the things and all of the ramifications and all of the issues and areas to which have led us to that point. And so if we don't mention some of those, it's not because we probably don't think they're important. It's just if we were to talk about all of them for you guys and talk about them, we'd be here a really long time. So, and that's not necessarily the whole point of this. But I think it is interesting you bring up this idea of original concept because, you know, I'd read this a long time ago, obviously, in the making of a book that Terry J. Erdman put together. It's the best companion out there. I mean, it's legitimately, you feel like you're behind the scenes with them as they're making the show. And they talked about this idea, and it had been a while since I had looked into that.
Yeah, the original concept is interesting, and it's somewhat similar, but it's missing a key component of what makes Past Tense what it really is. According to the DS9 Companion, Robert Hewitt Wolff's original teleplay for this story had Sisko going back in time and becoming homeless. He was claiming to be the commander of a space station in the future, so of course everyone thought he was crazy. The story didn't really work, and no one was happy with it, and Robert wasn't happy with it. And then Ira came up with the idea of the Bell Riots in the Sanctuary Districts, and that's what gave us the story that we have now. And in a different place, this is on the DVD extras, Season 3 DVD extras, Ira's talking about this, and he says he was walking in Santa Monica on the beach, and he saw these homeless people, and he noticed how everyone was just walking past these homeless people as if they were part of the scenery. And he wondered what such indifference could lead to if you allowed it to keep going.
Well, and that's an interesting point when you say that, because I live here in the Northwest. The Northwest, especially the Portland, Vancouver area that I live in, it has a massive homeless population. And part of that is because of the weather. I mean, most people think of the fact that it rains here a lot, but the climate is pretty temperate. It never gets super hot and it never gets super cold, especially in the city. And therefore, we have a very large homeless population of people who will travel to live up here because of that. And it is a very big problem. And how to handle that is something that's also quite interesting as well. how to not handle it is also another great conversation is too. But it's funny him mentioning that because it happens to us quite frequently if we're ever in the city, especially in Portland or in Seattle, it's the same. This is actually a very big issue where we live, and there is really no easy solution to it because the factors of homelessness are many and varied. It's not ever just one thing. And so yeah. I think that's the other thing about this is that it's more complicated than just, oh, somebody doesn't want a job. It's more complicated than just like somebody, it's always much more complicated than just the simple thing that gets thrown at. So, and that's what I think the episode does so well with the Bell riots, the sanctuary districts, is that the issue is so much more complicated than even the episodes, and there are two of them, can really fully dive into that would lead to something of what we see.
Yeah, and Sisko explains in his discussion with Bashir that these people didn't do anything wrong to be in here. You know, they just don't have jobs. They can't get jobs. I mean, if you lock them away, if you tell people that, well, you don't have a job and so you should be pushed away from society unless you get a job, but then we lock you up, how are you going to get a job?
Well, and I think, you know, that's something that's so interesting about this whole idea of the sanctuary districts is it seems as though the intention starts out as a good intention to actually give people a place to go that are homeless or don't have a job and to give them a place to be that's safe and all of that, which is a great idea. But again, you run into the problems that they do in the episodes where people just kind of fall, you know, through the cracks, and it becomes a place where the majority of people can't see the problem and you can kind of push it aside. And that's where the real danger comes.
Well, I think building a wall around the area doesn't help, right? If you want to make an area where people can go and get assistance and feel safe, and like you say, the original concept was probably, here's a place where people can get back on their feet and then they move back into normal society. And maybe we shouldn't even say normal society because that is segregating it in the first place, right? If there's no wall, it's just society, but here is a resource for people who need help.
Right. And I think, again, the whole point of even kind of making it a place that's secure with a wall has more to do with trying to make sure that the people that go there are safe. You know, everything starts out probably with the best intentions, but there are always consequences to the actions that we take, and there are unintended consequences. And I think that's the whole point of this episode. It's not as though the whole thing is just about people found a way to put people they didn't want in a place where they couldn't see them anymore. That's the only message you get from this, that's wrong. And I apologize for just saying you're wrong, but you're wrong. Because it started off, I think, with very good intentions of how do we find a way to actually help. Well, that was the goal. But there were a bunch of unintended consequences that came from those actions. And then there was no way to course correct, or there was no attempt to course correct. And I think that's where we end up. And that's where Sisko and Dax and Bashir end up in these episodes. And I think that's what makes Deep Space Nine so wonderful is it's all gray. We're talking about the nitty-gritty and the terribly tough situation that they're in, and that there aren't any simple, easy answers. There's no Kirk speech. There's going to be no Picard speech. It's going to be hard work to get through this, you know? And I think that's one of the things that we both love about Deep Space Nine so much is that it doesn't have trite answers to things. And even what Sisko and Bashir and Dax want to have happen in this, I think the answer that they have is not easy either, which is people need to know about this and the change is going to come, but it's going to be slow. And I think it's not comfortable. It doesn't leave you in a comfortable place, but I think that's on purpose. And that's the best thing that this episode should do.
Towards the end of the first episode, Sisko and Bashir are in that processing facility and they talk a bit about this And, you know, Bashir can't believe what's been happening. He's looking at it from a medical point of view. He's seeing people who have schizophrenia, and he knows that they could be cured very easily. Even in the 21st century, they could. It sort of reminded me of McCoy in Star Trek IV, where he can't believe, you know, kidney dialysis is going on, and they have an easy treatment. But in this situation, Bashir, he can't believe that people aren't trying more. And he says that they could cure that man today if they gave a damn. And Sisko says it's not that they don't give a damn. It's that they've given up. The social problems they face seem too enormous to deal with. And sometimes I feel like maybe we've given up on some of the social problems that we have, and we look for solutions that maybe is similar to what happened here with the sanctuary districts. And those solutions sort of take on a life of their own and get out of hand. And what I can see with the sanctuary districts is the idea that the government had this plan. Maybe initially it seemed like it was well funded. They seemed like they had a process, but things are never as nice and neat as they are on the drawing board when you're coming up with a plan and you're establishing a program. And then you see the people like Vin and Bernardo, the two officers that find Sisko and Bashir, and you see how tired they are. Or you look at Lee, the woman in the processing facility who processes the paperwork for Sisko and Bashir, and you see how frustrated and tired she is. And then everything just spirals from there. Everything goes downhill, and you end up with a situation where it's not helping anyone.
I think that's the thing that was so interesting in this, is that, and I honestly disagree with the solution to the problem in the first place, well, we just need a government program. Like, I mean, honestly, you put the government in charge of anything and it falls apart. And part of that is just the massive bureaucracies that come with it. I mean, history should tell you that, as well as, I mean, Star Wars can tell you that. And Star Trek, I think, in some ways kind of shows that too, is the problem of having something just so overly big and trying to blanket a problem throughout, like something in the entire United States. And we'll find out in the second episode, the entire world is having problems. It's not just the United States. I mean, there are riots in Europe with student riots. And I mean, it sounds like today, honestly, trying to create a solution for every single city in all of the U.S. and just say, well, this is the solution, instead of breaking it down and making it something that is community-based, like, is based on the needs in that specific community, in that specific city, you know, creating that massive bureaucracy and all that. It just, that's usually not the way to answer a problem. And I think that's really where they came to, is that they blatantly created a solution that really didn't fit the needs of the individual cities and the individuals in there. Because like you said, Bashir's talking about, we have mentally ill people in here along with people who are just wanting a job. Like, that doesn't, you're shoving people into it's a square peg in a round hole. Like, that doesn't work. And I think that was something that doesn't get addressed enough, really, in the issue, that the solution isn't a national jobs act from the government, and that's not going to solve this problem. It's going to need to be a lot more grassroots and down to earth in those different cities to really solve these kind of issues. And it's going to have to be people caring in general, you know. And that's the one thing that they do really right, is that's the answer, is people need to see other people as important as themselves. And honestly, Chris, we kind of talked about at the beginning, where do we see ourselves? Are we worse off than 1995? And yes, I think we are. And I think it's because the world we live in has become so self-centered. Yeah. People only see themselves, and so they don't want to see the problems.
Right.
And just look anywhere you want, whether it's the internet, social media, whatever you watch on television, your favorite television shows. It's reflected everywhere that you are all that matters. But that's not true. And if we ever want to get to that idic, that's where it's all about that everybody matters, right? And so we can't get there, though, when everybody's just focused on themselves. So,
yeah, I think social media is the shining example of this because it's so instant and it's in your face and anyone can access it. And I've definitely come to feel that way. As someone who's used social media for, I don't know, how long now, like 9 years or something like that, 10 years, I've seen it get progressively more and more to the point that you're describing. The bit I was quoting there with Sisko and Bashir continues with exactly what you were saying. And Bashir says, causing people to suffer because you hate them is terrible, but causing people to suffer because you have forgotten how to care, that's really hard to understand. And Sisko says, they'll remember. It'll take some time and it won't be easy, but eventually people in this century will remember how to care. I think right now, today in 2017, we are in that place that Bashir is describing. Now, can we get to the place that Sisko's describing? Are we going to remember how to care in the 21st century?
Well, and that is a question because Bashir asks, what would the Federation be any different if we ran up against a huge problem that we couldn't figure out how to fix? Let's be honest, the Federation has it easy because everybody's basic needs are taken care of. There is no famine. There's no war in the massive sense that we have it on our planet now.
There's no war inside the Federation.
Right.
For the most part, yeah.
Everybody's needs are taken care of. They have food, clothing, shelter, home. Nobody's fighting over resources. That's not... Until you can find a way to create a replicator, basically, you're not going to fix the world's problems because people are going to still feel like they have to fight over resources. And until we can figure out those kind of basic needs questions, people are always going to be in that position of, I got to protect what's mine, right? Because we don't feel like we have enough, even though we do. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are. And I don't see an opportunity to move forward until the majority, if not the whole world, could finally feel like, I don't have to worry about where the next paycheck's coming from. I don't have to worry about whether I have a roof over my head or my kids are fed or, you know, I'm fed. Yeah. All those basic needs, once you can take care of that, you can create a utopian society. But I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah. But that is the root of the problem, right? The decisions that are made, the votes that are cast, things that we see in the world today, it does ultimately come down on an individual level to where's the next meal coming from? Am I going to have a roof over my head? Am I going to be able to pay for my health care, send my children to school?
Absolutely. Right?
That's where it comes from.
Yeah. Well, and when you realize that, I think you realize the things that are truly important, right? Like the basic necessities for people are what's truly important. What are we going to fight for everybody to have access to that, right? So if we're fighting over things that aren't that, like how to make sure that everybody has that first before we deal with some other issues, and there's a lot of social issues that get pushed out there that aren't about people making sure that those homeless people, they can be fed, mm-hmm. they can get their mental illness taken care of. They, you know, like we're fighting over the wrong things, people. I don't want to be too specific because I'm sure I could piss some people off, but let's focus on what really matters, and that's people having a decent quality of life in the first place.
Yeah. Right. So transitioning here to a related topic, which I've called cause and effect on our outline, but when you look at society today and some of the fracturing that's happening, you see a growing gap between the people who have and the people who don't have, the haves and have-nots. And this leads to a situation of not caring, which Bashir is talking about here, because if you have everything that you need, are you really that concerned about the people who don't have the things that they need? And if giving those things to those people means that you might have slightly less, then are you opposed to sharing the wealth? And I'm not saying that everyone who is wealthy or everyone who has all the resources they need don't care about other people, because I know that plenty of people do. And that's why we have organizations that help others. And that's why that's a good use of social media too, where people use social media to try to organize assistance for those in need. But I think that you do see in society a lot of growing separation, where the people who have everything they need are simply looking for ways to increase their own wealth. And they're so separated from what's happening to the average person. And when I say those who are the have-nots, I'm not necessarily talking about the people who are homeless in the street. I'm talking about even people who we would traditionally consider middle class, who are really struggling to get by day after day and year after year. And it feels that that struggle is becoming greater and greater, while the gap between the haves and the have-nots increases. It's interesting in Japan, where the society here is quite different from the U.S. Of course, there are some very wealthy people here, and of course, we do have very poor people and homeless people, but the majority of the population is in this band of middle class. The gap between the wealthy and the poor isn't so great. You've got wealthy and poor on the fringes, and majority of the country, people are sort of in the same category. It's quite different from what we see when we look at the U.S., where there are a lot of people who truly are very poor, and there are a small number of people who are very wealthy, and then there is a large middle class, but there's a lot more. If you look at the middle class, there's a lot more on the sides of that, right? Upper middle class, lower middle class, going into the poor. And this gap is increasing and increasing, and I think that we're seeing it more and more in some of the decisions that are being made today. And I bring it up mainly because we're talking about whether this episode is prophetic, and now we're only 7 years away from the events of this episode. And does it seem that we are, in fact, heading towards this situation?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. And that's kind of a sad statement.
Yeah.
And watching this episode, I was struck by this idea of something that I'm seeing in the world today, and where I live in the U.S., but I'm seeing it in more than just one place. This segregation that's happening and this tribalism that is coming back. Because
that's happening all around the world.
Exactly.
Too.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying, is because people aren't feeling taken care of, we're starting to segment into smaller and smaller tribalistic groups. And that issue is a problem because people are beginning to again see people outside of their quote unquote tribe as less than them, because they're not a part of us. Instead of seeing all of the human race as one and the same and together, we're all in this together. There ain't no High School Musical happening here where we all come together and we're all kumbaya. No. And I think that is the biggest problem in the entire world, is this segmented tribalism that is really starting to destroy the foundations that we had been trying to build in something like the U.S., where we were trying to come together and create a culture based on many cultures, not just one. We were the kind of like that melting pot idea. I mean, that's all, like, you say that these days, and people are like, oh, that's horrible. That's cultural appropriation. That, I mean, but you're driving us apart to the point where nobody can be together, you know, and that is across economic boundaries, that's across racial boundaries, that's across orientation boundaries, or, I mean, we've created all of these boundaries now, instead of finding ways to come together and be, you know, I mean, Star Trek is what? About there being a one world government that then is a part of a multi government of planets.
Yeah.
And it's not just part of, but
the leader of.
Right, right. And it's about the one and the many all together, right? That just is not something that we're segmenting into the many again. And it's kind of a, you know, we're definitely farther away, that's for sure.
It feels like we've gone a century back in time when you watch the news.
Kind of, yeah.
But it's easier that way, right? It's easier to say, well, it's just my group. It's my group against the world. It's my group against the world. It's my group, and we're going to take care of ourselves, and we don't need anybody else. In this episode, I think it's in the second part, when they're in Brynn's office, and they're having this little cocktail party, and there are two guests, and one of them says that Europe is falling apart. Well, look right now. We've got Brexit. We've got, if Le Pen wins in France, we may have Frexit. So France may leave the European Union. If the UK and France both leave the European Union, then what's next? Germany going to leave? What's left? And the other person says, well, at least we don't have to worry about that happening here. Well, I wouldn't be so sure, because the way that we are splitting up into little tribes in the US could happen there too.
Well, and there are two sides to every coin. So having a common goal that binds us together and a common ideal set that binds us together is what had made America work for a long time. The same thing for the European Union and all of those things. What we're finding is that it's difficult to continue that as the world changes and those ideas and ideals don't seem to stay the same. But at the core of all of that is, I think, this idea, what I'm going to say is the sanctity of human life, that we are all in this together. We are all the same. And the moment that you lose that from birth to old age, you've lost everything. And I think that's really at the core of the problem. And it's when we just don't see each other as being like me as a person to anybody I see on the street. They are just as valuable as a person as I am, you know? And when we don't see that value, we definitely start to lose. And so, yeah. And America was always built on that we all have that value, right?
Exactly.
Well, for the most, I mean, we could get into all sorts of things, but in the end.
Right. But the basic idea.
Exactly. I mean, yes. What's in our Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, all people are created equal. That's a very unique idea in human history.
Yeah.
And it's one that we're finding that we're moving away from because, again, as we talked about, everybody's just kind of moving into these smaller and smaller groups. Yeah. So.
And again, we're not saying that America was true to those words following its independence, because we know history.
Absolutely.
We know what happened there. But I would say that for a number of decades in the 20th century, certainly there were efforts made to try to make progress on many fronts in that area. And progress was made, and it wasn't perfect because it's difficult to solve these problems, but progress was being made. Now it feels like we're starting to roll back a little bit. And that's very troubling when you look at this episode, which was made 22 years ago, looking 30 years into the future, and now we're getting so close to it, and it's starting to feel like this might be our 2024. Another thing, Matthew, in the DS9 Companion was said by Ira, and he talked about this story of past tense as being part of his examination of Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future, that to get to the utopia that Gene gave us, humanity had to go through hell. We know some of the events, like World War III, the eugenics wars, and such that took place. And this is something that Ira's adding into that mix. It's yet another one of those trials that humanity had to go through. How do you think this fits in to that string of trials, or maybe that path through hell that humanity has to go through.
I think, Chris, that it's absolutely essential. And this is another thing that we're seeing all over the world, but this whole idea that just because something is hard, we should avoid it. But that is absolutely untrue. I mean, just look at your life, look at my life, I look at anybody's life, and the things where people have learned the most have been the hard things. That's what's taught them something, right? And if we look at history, God, we can take an American history. Civil War, civil rights, all of these things, very trying, tough things to go through. But without going through them, we would have never reached another level. And every trial, every fire encounter refines us. It makes us hopefully better. That's the goal, right? You know, metal is refined in fire. And the only way to make it purer and better is to continue to refine it in the fire over and over and over again. Humanity is always in the fire. And how we move forward is to take the lessons of the past and to learn from them. The problem is I don't know necessarily if we're learning the right lessons and implementing the right changes to learn from those. And that's I think, absolutely, you got to go through hell before you get to heaven. Steve Miller Band said it the best. And I think we're definitely in the hell.
Matthew, I think there are a few listeners out there right now who are disappointed that you didn't actually sing lines from the song because
of
your
famous orb. We're easing our way
recitals.
Back in, you know, so.
Okay, but yeah, it's an excellent point. Let's start to wrap up this discussion because we're going to have part two of this in the next episode of The Orb. So shifting gears a little bit, talking about the structure of the episode, teching the tech. We've talked here on The Orb many times about how DS9 is unique in Star Trek in that, for the most part, it avoids the whole technobabble issue. It avoids teching the tech. It does it sometimes, but they play it down. In a later episode in Trials and Tribulations, they use time travel simply by saying that we're transporting the orb of time. It did something funky to the ship. Now we're back in time, right? There's no big explanation about chronotron particles or anything like that. But in this story, we do get that because they have to somehow not only get back in time, but they also have to explain how the Defiant and how the Defiant's crew is protected from the changes in the timeline. So how do you think they did in this story?
Well, I mean, other than the fact that I just kind of fell asleep during that, the whole explanation.
You didn't have the same expression on your face like Kira gets when Miles starts explaining stuff to her.
It probably was. It's this glazed over, and it basically comes out like that dog cartoon where all the dog hears is blah, 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 Rover. Blah, 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 Rover. That's all I'm hearing is blah, 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 Kira, blah, 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 blah. You know, it is the most TNG-ish, techno-babble-ish, Voyager-like explanation of how they get back. I don't care. They get back in time because there's a malfunction with the cloaking device and all this stuff. Okay, that's great. All that really matters is that we got back in time and we end up with our characters in the positions that they're in, which, I mean, you know, talking about teching the tech, where we end up at the cliffhanger for part one is Sisko taking the mantle of that he's Gabriel Bell. I mean, talk about a time switch and a gear shift, and it's a great to be continued.
Okay, so now this raises a question I hadn't thought of before we started, but the fact that Sisko is Gabriel Bell, so after this, in the history books, Benjamin Sisko is Gabriel Bell. We have that moment in Little Green Men where they're traveling to Earth and Nog's like, why does this look like Sisko? Does that mean that from the perspective of history, the people aren't important, it's only the actions that are important?
Well, for temporal mechanics for Star Trek, yes. But in the end, isn't that also just true about humanity? I mean, in Harry Potter, Dumbledore says that to Harry. It's our choices that matter, because that defines who we are, is what we do. I mean, you might not like that, but it is absolutely true that what we choose to do is how we will be remembered, because that will be the legacy we leave. And it's a scary thought when you think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But Sisko protecting the legacy of Bell is so important, because it was monumental for history. And I think it's a great way to kind of, get us into our next orb, Chris. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more, but it is the thing for this whole episode, because that's the only way to make change happen, is to make the change. Well, I could, sing a little Michael Jackson for you. I got to make that change. Got to look at the man in the mirror. You know what I'm saying?
And he looks like Benjamin Sisko.
Exactly. He does look like Benjamin Sisko. But no, he's not. He's Gabriel Bell, but he's also Sisko, but he's also a prophet. He's a complicated dude.
Well, let's close out this part of the discussion, and we'll pick up again next episode. So thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm glad that the orb is back.
We're back in the saddle again. There you go, Chris.
There's the vocals we've been waiting for. All right, past tense isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM recently, so here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
All right, I'll tell you what. I have never, ever, ever worn a costume or cosplayed or anything like that. Now the challenge, the gauntlet has been out there. We're going to have to put together a Mugatu costume.
Mugatu costume.
We got to.
To the journey!
Make him taller. Give him some salt and pepper gray hair.
Yeah. Make those shoulders broader.
Computer, put a tattoo over his left eye. Oh my god, look what I just did!
I made a Chakotay.
Warp 5.
Are you an outside entity that is watching you deal as the bad archer with the good archer? And Scott just looks at me and turns around and goes, oh god, will someone come here and get Gary a script?
Meta Treks.
But these Romulans are still walking around in those nasty pointy shoulder tunics that they wear. I mean, what's up with that?
Doesn't seem like they shed as much of their identity as the Klingons
did. Yeah, not shedding as much of their identity.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere that you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, please find us in Apple Podcasts. Just click the subscribe button. You'll get the newest episode as soon as it comes out. And also leave us a star rating and a written review. That'll help us out a great deal. If you're not an Apple user, if you use Android, we've got you covered there as well. You can find us in third-party Android apps. You can also find us on Google Play Music. And regardless of platform, you're going to find us in places like Spreaker and TuneIn and Stitcher and SoundCloud. You can go to the website, stream from the page, download the MP3 file. We try to put the orb everywhere we can and all of our shows. So check us out over there. Now, Matthew, we didn't do any feedback in this episode. And of course, on the orb, we do the orb of mail. Anyway, I would like to put a call out to everyone listening to send us your thoughts, send us your questions. We're going to do an orb of mail coming up here very early on in our return. So send us anything you'd like for us to cover in the orb of mail, and we'll be putting that together soon. You can ask us questions in the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field if you don't know how to get there yet, and it should come right up. It is a closed group, so if you're not yet a member, you'll need to click join, and then we'll let you right on in. You can also send us email by going to trek.fm/contact and using the form that you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that'll come to both Matthew and me. And of course, you can find the network on Twitter as well. TrekFM is the username. Matthew, if people want to find you personally, where should they go?
Oh my gosh, Chris, you can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I lurk around on Instagram, MRushing, taking pictures of all sorts of things. You could find me here on the network doing the 602 Club, which is our general geek show talking about all our favorite fandoms that don't have anything to do with Star Trek. We also got the Star Wars 602 Club collection you can find if you just love Star Wars and wanted to listen to all those episodes. All of that is in Apple Podcasts. And I mentioned Harry Potter. If you like Harry Potter, you can check out Owl Post, a Harry Potter podcast. You can find that on Apple Podcasts as well. And I'm doing a fun show with my good friend John Mills talking about Star Wars, and that's called Aggressive Negotiation. So plenty of places to check me out. But Chris, that's enough about me. Where can people find you?
Well, if you would like to find me elsewhere on the network, you can find me on The Ready Room. I mentioned The Ready Room 211, which is a new episode. Like The Orb, The Ready Room has been on hiatus since the beginning of my eye surgery saga. But this new episode, Larry Nemechek and I hopped on mic together, and we talked about Star Trek Discovery. We talked about a lot of different topics from the 50th anniversary year into 2017. And at the beginning, I do give a detailed explanation of what's been happening with my health. So please check that out, The Ready Room 211. You can find that in Apple Podcasts. You can find it on Spotify. You can find it on our website. The Ready Room is all over the place. And in addition to starting my podcasting again, I'm also going to be starting up my writing again, which you can find on the official website at StarTrek.com. I don't have a drop date yet for the new article, but it will be coming up pretty soon. So you can check out my other thoughts on Star Trek over there at StarTrek.com. And in social media, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's also my username on Facebook, pretty much everywhere. And you can also reach me through the Babel Conference, which I mentioned earlier. If you'd like to help us keep the network going, keep all the shows going, we would love to have your support as a patron on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out all the details. We have a special website for patrons called Patron Zone, and that's available for those who contribute $5 or more per month. We do early releases on there thanks to our new Patreon manager, Brandon Shea Mutala, who, of course, you know from Melodic Treks. We've been getting a lot of shows out early, and that's been really great. And we also have a preview of our newest podcast called Primitive Culture, which is available there early for our patrons. And that'll be released by the time this orb drops, it'll probably be out. That is a culture and history podcast hosted by Tony Black and Duncan Barrett. And if you enjoyed our discussion today, you'll probably enjoy Primitive Culture as well. Matthew, let's also send a big thanks to our associate producers here on The Orb, William Murray and Kay Elizabeth Shaw. If you would like to support The Orb as an associate producer, you can also do that through the Patreon program. Just let us know that you'd like to be an AP on The Orb, and we would love to have your support. Thank you so much to William and Kay for your support, and thank you to everyone else who helps us keep the network going. Well, Matthew, I think we better go. We've got a cocktail party to go to with some bigwig guy there in San Francisco, and I think I need a few drinks before we do the next episode.
Yeah, I definitely think it's time for another round, Chris, and thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb. Recording.
21st century.
Gimme pants,
yeah.
Yeah, better than ghost pants, because those, you're not really sure if they're there or not. So
you can just barely see them.
Barely. Yeah. You know? Whew. Yeah.
You can see me? Just barely. All right, here we go.